we have this generation of highly accomplished and driven young women who also were plagued by the sense that nothing they did was ever good enough.
For many girls today, the drive to achieve is fueled by brutal self-criticism and an acute fear of failure. Though young women have never been more successful, outpacing boys in both grade point averages and college enrollments, they have also never struggled more. On the surface, girls may seem to be thriving, but in reality, they are anxious and overwhelmed. Hello, I'm Natalie Demers, the Director of Research Initiatives and Programs for the National Coalition of Girls Schools. In this episode of Pep Talks, I will be discussing this issue with the New York Times bestselling author and educator, Rachel Simmons, who has been researching the emotional lives and real-world experiences of young women for two decades. Currently, Rachel is the Girls Research Scholar in Residence at the Hewitt School in New York and is the Leadership Development Specialist at the Wirtle Center for Leadership at Smith College. Rachel's latest book, Enough As She Is, How to Help Girls Move Beyond Impossible Standards of Success to Live Healthy, Happy, and Fulfilling Lives, provides insight into these challenges and offers practical advice. Rachel, thank you for speaking with me. Let's start with what prompted you to write Enough As She Is.
So many of the things that I write come from listening to girls as an educator. And what I was finding as I traveled around talking with girls and their teachers and parents, and also in my work at Smith, was that we had this generation of highly accomplished and driven young women who also were plagued by the sense that nothing they did was ever good enough. And I could see these two strands kind of happening in parallel, which was we had girls doing more and better than they ever had, but also anxious, stressed, often depressed, and often disconnected from why they were pursuing all this success in the first place. And so I began to see that girls believed on some level that they needed to trade their wellness in the pursuit of success. NCGS was one of the first organizations to start seeing that. And several years ago, they invited me to talk about the intersection of leadership and wellness. And so I've been forever grateful to NCGS for helping me to articulate some of the ideas in Enough As She Is.
According to your research, how has this culture change affected girls' well-being?
So in addition to seeing a great deal of anxiety and stress, we've learned that adolescent girls get the least sleep of any group of Americans in the United States. So, you know, we're seeing enormous stress, but I think psychologically, we're seeing a couple of phenomena that we as educators have a lot of potential to make headway on. And one of those is imposter phenomenon. So I think when you have a group of people who are constantly feeling that nothing they can do is ever enough, and that they've got to be smarter, they've got to get better grades, they've got to do more all the time, it's very common for them to feel like they don't belong. It's very common for them to think, you know what, I'm not nearly as good or smart as other people seem to think I am, which is that's imposter phenomenon. And so this is well in place by adolescents. And so working with girls to help them understand that the sense of imposterism is something we all have, and that you can listen to it and talk back to it. You have to identify with it. You don't have to believe it. I think that's absolutely critical to name. And just by talking about imposterism, especially if you're an educator and you can say, you know, I've been there too, and I've also felt like I'm maybe a fraud sometimes, that is liberating. Another issue that we see girls dealing with is ruminating or overthinking. And I can tell you that if you bring up this issue with students, they just immediately want to talk about it. And overthinking is when you are going around and around in your mind in a self-critical way about a cause of a problem or a consequence of a problem, but you're not really dealing with the problem. One of the things I discovered in my research is that not only do girls and women disproportionately overthink, but that overthinking peaks in young adulthood. So that means that young women are the population that are overthinking the most, and very few of them know that it's a thing. Like, they just think, oh, I think a lot about stuff. So telling girls, listen, the more you think about something, that's not going to get you closer to solving it. That overthinking is linked to a loss of motivation, a loss of problem-solving skills, a decline there. It's actually linked to binge eating. It's considered the reason why adolescent girls and women report suffering from depression at twice the rate of adolescent boys and men because of that propensity that we have to overthink. So we know that pressure to be all things to all people and that sense that I have to take care of everyone around me and be the good girl is going to lead to that internalized overthinking. And so talking with girls about that, I think, can be very powerful. And there's a lot of tools in Enough As She Is to help educators do that.
What strategies can educators use to help girls overcome self-doubt and close the confidence gap?
The thing that I like to do most is to work with educators on how to apply this work directly with students, because I'm one myself, and I think that's where the real change is going to happen. I definitely think we have a lot of work to do and that we can do with girls on their mindset around challenge and success. Now, I'm not about to launch into a thing on growth mindset, don't worry. I'm sure many of the listeners are really familiar with that. What I'd like to focus on are the ways that girls set goals and establish goals for themselves. I think because of that pressure that they perceive that they have to kind of go big or go home with their accomplishments, and that they're supposed to always be doing things in this very polished way, a lot of girls end up not really understanding the most effective way to set goals and take risks. In other words, they set goals that are either too big or too impossible to achieve, fail to meet them, and then are plagued by self-criticism, which, by the way, also describes most people and their New Year's resolution. One thing that I have found great success with is just helping girls break down bigger goals into smaller bites. And I can tell you as an educator that you'll often get an eye roll and you'll often get like, this is so dumb because like, I don't want to set small goals. And I always say that's how you know you're doing it right. If you get some pushback and annoyed sighs and noises from the girls you're working with, that means you're making headway. Because of course, they don't think that making things into smaller bites is smart. They think that's a waste of their time. But what we know, research tells us, is that if you can take steps incrementally, and you can show yourself that you can accomplish things in small surges of accomplishment, that you can parlay that into the bigger risks. Part of what we're doing here and part of what I'm talking about is just helping girls lower their standards a little bit, which again is that thing where they'll be like, what? And when you say to girls, like, actually, if you can just go a little bit easier on yourself and lower your standards and not expect yourself to do everything right the first time, you're going to find it's a lot easier to be brave because you're not going to be holding yourself to an impossible standard to achieve. So both of those things, I think, have been really useful for me as an educator. And by helping your student break something down into smaller bites and kind of really celebrating the small wins, I think that's also key as the educator. That is something you can apply in any domain, and it's been incredibly useful with my students.
You mentioned in your book the need for turning self-criticism into self-compassion. What do you mean by this?
When you look at the research on self-compassion, and increasingly there's more and more research being done on self-compassion in adolescents, you see that there is a gender difference, and you see that there is a significant drop in self-compassion for girls between middle school and high school. What we see, and I think more anecdotally what I hear, is that girls think that if they are hard on themselves, that this will be motivating to them. That if they are hard on themselves, they will remain invested. So that self-criticism is tantamount to, it gives me energy, it gives me accountability, it keeps me focused on the goal. When in fact, what research also tells us is that self-criticism elevates symptoms of anxiety. And it's not just girls who believe this about self-criticism. Many of us as adults believe the same. What I think we have to do is we need to help redefine self-criticism for girls as not a source of all good things, that if you beat yourself up, you can move yourself forward, but to say, isn't there a way that you can retain accountability and motivation and investment without being mean to yourself? Is there a way to pursue your goals and your success that doesn't happen at the expense of your self-worth? And so to turn self-criticism into self-compassion means teaching the three steps of self-compassion, which were developed by Professor Kristen Neff at the University of Texas at Austin. She has a wonderful website, which I strongly encourage everyone to check out. It's self-compassion.org. You will find incredible resources there. But the three steps work like this. If I am being hard on myself and saying, like, I'm really stupid at math, and that's why I screwed up this test, and I'm just terrible at math, and I have to figure out how to get better. The first step of self-compassion is mindfulness, which just basically means instead of talking about how stupid I am at math, can I focus on what I feel right now? And what I feel right now is I feel embarrassed. I feel worried. It's not that my world is ending and I won't go to college. That's not mindful. It's how are you right now? What's happening for you without judging it? And the second step of self-compassion is self-kindness. And all that means is if a close friend of yours was saying what you're saying, what would you say to your friend? Because of course, we're all so much nicer to other people than we are to ourselves. The third step of self-compassion is common humanity. And that means, are you the only person who's ever gotten a bad grade on a math test? Or do other people struggle academically? Do other people struggle with math? And this piece is important because girls are really good at catastrophizing and deciding that, like, not only is everything horrible, but they're the only person who's ever experienced it as horribly as it is being experienced. So we want girls to understand that they're not alone. So those three things, being mindful instead of exaggerating what's going on, being kind to yourself, as kind as you might be to someone else, and remembering that you're not alone, are the critical components of turning self-criticism into self-compassion.
How do we empower girls to create their own definition of success?
One of the byproducts of this intense pressure to get into college has been a real loss of purpose in girls. And by purpose, I mean the sense that I'm in this world trying to do something that's bigger than me. I'm not just in it to get good grades and get a great job and make money 10 or 15 years from now. I'm in this learning thing because I care about something that's bigger than I am, and I want to make a difference in the world in some way that goes beyond myself. And I don't mean by saving the world. You can make a difference in all kinds of ways, and you can be absolutely a business or whatever it is. But when students are pushed to define themselves purely in terms of their grades and their scores, they disconnect from that greater sense of purpose. And so one of the most important ways to help girls define success on their own terms is to help them connect with their purpose, to help them connect with what really lights them up inside, the moments when they go into flow and sort of lose track of time, the things that get them angry, the things that they really feel strongly about changing. And when you help girls tap into that, and girls in particular, some research has told us, are very interested in changing the world and interested in making it a better place, that can help invest them in pursuing success in a way that isn't about, you know, self-destruction, but that's more about making change or being part of something that's bigger than themselves. So purpose is absolutely key.
This is an interesting time for girls and women in the U.S. What do you think this means regarding the healthy development of girls?
I recently wrote an article in the Huffington Post about the tension that exists between girls' academic success, their success as leaders. A study just came out that found that girls have pulled even with boys in their desire to lead, which is a remarkable shift, and that girls continue to make enormous progress when it comes to their academic lives and their extracurricular lives. Where they're not making as much progress, this study found, was in their reporting that they feel often made fun of by boys, talked about by boys in sexual terms, sexualized by others, and sometimes even physically unsafe. Part of what I think is happening right now is there is a national conversation happening about what girls and women are entitled to when it comes to their safety. And I think that that is going to have a very important impact on the way girls think about their bodies and the way girls think about consent and the way girls learn to use their voices. We're talking about things that were never talked about before. And I think the other thing that's happening is we're seeing enormous political activism among women. We're seeing huge numbers of women running for office, but we're also seeing women on social media becoming very effective activists. And we're seeing a lot of teenage girls do that. So I think girls are not only seeing subject matter talked about in ways that haven't been before, they're seeing a level of activism and outspokenness among girls and women that we also haven't seen before. And I think that can only bode well for how girls develop, and especially for how much agency they feel in their lives.
Thank you, Rachel. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. For our listeners interested in following Rachel on Twitter, she can be found at Rachel J. Simmons. To learn more about girls' schools, visit ncgs.org or follow NCGS on Twitter at Girls Schools. Pep Talks is a project of the National Coalition of Girls Schools, the leading advocate for pre-K through 12th grade girls' schools. With more than 250 member schools across North America and beyond, NCGS is dedicated to educating and empowering girls to lead lives of commitment, confidence, contribution, and fulfillment. Pep Talks is produced by Olivia Haas and Jen Shakeshaft and edited by Stacey Tippins, with special thanks to the Madera School in McLean, Virginia.